Hello and welcome to the Airline Weekly Lounge. I'm your host, Gordon Smith, and this week I'm joined by co-host Jay Shabbat to discuss the latest earnings and insights from Delta Airlines. Hey, Jay, how's it going?
Great, Gordon. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's earnings season again. I can't believe it. It feels like we've only just wrapped up the last of the last season, and here we are. I guess we've had the laggards who have been trailing a little bit, and Delta's first out the post. Where do we begin?
There are still one or two airlines, I'm thinking of two in China in particular, that haven't yet even reported their Q4 23 results. So here we are with Delta delivering Q1 24. So we got overlap here.
Does that mean that is Delta just handing in the homework early? Are they the teacher's pet?
Well, they do. It's quite remarkable. Delta, if you look at pretty much every company in every publicly traded company in the United States, all the big ones anyway, with the big market capitalization, Delta's like number one. They go before anybody else. I think even JP Morgan, you know, the banks tend to go very early. They're JP Morgan's going Friday. So we're by the way, talking, we should say that we're speaking on Thursday morning, New York time, a little later over in Europe. But Delta had just reported their earnings on Wednesday. So when I say JP Morgan is reporting on Friday, there's a little bit of context. Delta was even before that. But that's less important than the actual numbers here. So how did Delta do? In a word, they did very well, as usual. Shouldn't surprise anyone. Delta's got quite a track record here. So to be specific, during the January to March quarter, Delta reported a 5% operating margin, 5%. And just a little for comparison's sake here, a year ago, Q1 23, they did only 4%. So nice little improvement there of a point. Now they did fall short of the 10% operating margin that they did in the first quarter of 2019. Now I know there are some people out there that want to forget about 2019 and stop, you know, talking about that. I kind of like to still take a peek and see how things compare. I know the world has certainly changed a lot, and you know, very, very different industry we're in now, very different environment. But for those of you who are interested, there was a operating margin was cut in half from 10% to 5% between 2019 and 2024, and I can tell you why. I could sum it up pretty quickly. If you look at the revenues, compare today, you know, Q1 24 versus Q1 2019, revenues are 31% higher for Delta. Now, fuel costs also up exactly 31%. Revenues up 31%, fuel costs up 31%. So why are Delta's earnings down? Well, here it is: labor costs up 44%. So Delta is just paying, you know, more for its workers than it was pre-COVID. I'm not sure they're terribly distressed about that. I mean, you know, you'd rather be paying your workers than, you know, paying higher fuel prices, I guess. So that's your reason right there. So I think I've given you a summary, and then we can get into a little bit more detail here.
Absolutely. You've delivered the gift, and now we're unwrapping the present, and we're going to unpack some of those themes, to use a terrible analogy. My apologies, Jay. Let's look at some of the key trends, because there is a lot to discuss here, so much so we're dedicating our entire episode to Delta this week. Listening to the earnings call on Wednesday, the mood music was pretty upbeat. Travel demand is robust. Is that your impression as well, Jay?
Yeah. I think the upbeat mood, I think that was totally justified. It was a very good, a good set of earnings. And keeping in mind too, that this was the first quarter, this is the slowest quarter of the year. Remember, Delta actually gave some guidance for the second quarter, which tends to be, second quarter is actually turning into the, it might just be the busiest quarter of the year. Now, traditionally the third quarter was always the busiest because it included the, you know, the real big summer peak when, you know, kids are off from school, people take summer vacations. But as Delta explained some of that demand has actually shifted into the second quarter because a lot of schools in the United States, particularly in the south of the United States, they go back much earlier. So they're back in school like early August. So people tend to now, you know, kind of move their vacations earlier, and that's helping to boost second quarter. But that's not terribly important. What is important is they expect a very, very, very strong second quarter. Operating margin in the teens. I'm looking forward here. Yeah, here it is. Operating margin between 14 and 15%. So it's, you mentioned that the sort of the mute music was good in the earnings call, and rightly so, because demand is pretty, it's hard to find any blemishes really. I mean, premium is going great. Long haul is going great. The loyalty program, you know, tremendous amount of revenue flowing in between, you know, Delta has a very important partnership with American Express, which they distribute, you know, credit cards tied to Delta SkyMiles program. That's just, you know, $1.7 billion in revenue just during the quarter. And they're working toward an annual goal of $10 billion. I mean, Delta's Woo-hoo. A 50, but yeah, I mean, Delta, this is, I mean, that your reaction is totally justified there, Gordon. I think we need to all hoot and holler because it's quite impressive. You know, Delta's a $50 billion company in terms of their annual revenues, and $10 billion is what they're shooting for here for, you know, annual revenues just from American Express, that partnership. You know, domestic, there were some concerns, you know, our domestic revenue starting to soften. We'll get a better picture of that when some of the low-cost carriers, you know, Southwest and whatnot report. But for Delta, the numbers looked great. I mean, unit revenues were up despite a small, you know, increase in capacity. You know, they said Asia strong. They said deep South America strong. You know, if there's one blemish at all, maybe it's, they did kind of mention that some of those Caribbean routes, you know, short haul Latin America, you know, think people taking vacations down in the Bahamas or whatever, that may be still a little bit weak, you know, just ton of capacity in those markets. So you know, maybe if, like I said, that may be the only blemish. And then, you know, very interestingly, Delta also said on top of all of this, that business travel is really starting to, you know, come back, and they're seeing it from some of these industries that were very kind of late to come back. Technology, for example, companies like Amazon, Google, you know, those companies had really cut their travel budgets a lot in the past couple of years, you know, since pandemic, and they haven't really, you know, gotten back to where they were. And Delta's now starting to say that even those guys are getting there. So yeah, it's a happy story, all smiles on the revenue side.
Slam dunk, as you guys say, stateside. It's impressive stuff. As an outsider looking in, you always look for the blemishes, like you said. You know, there's got to be some areas of weakness. So something's going up, someone's going down, ins and outs, ups and downs, peaks and troughs, whatever you want to call it. It's right. Pretty strong across the board. I mean, the Delta president, Glenn Hauenstein, he said the company had conducted a survey, and 90% of companies that responded intend to increase their travel in the second quarter. And you could argue that's seasonal, but that's still significant. And it really does set up Delta to deliver a really, really strong set of corporate revenues towards the latter half of the year. The president added that corporate travel sales were up 14% in the first quarter, with technology, customer service, and financial services industries leading the increase. What? Where do we unpack that, Jay? Is corporate back completely, or is this maybe just a bit of a pandemic bounce back?
Well, yeah, I don't think it's you know, I think there certainly is some change in corporate patterns. I mean, I think there are people that are maybe combining leisure and business trips, and there's absolutely some people who, you know, are doing Zoom rather than calling. So, you know, but I don't think it needs to get back to 100%. Now, remember, there's a big difference between whether we're talking about volumes or revenues. Now, if you're talking about volumes, yeah, it's true. Business travel is probably, you know, Delta didn't give a number, and I don't recall any other airlines giving a number in recent quarters. But if you go back, you know, two or three quarters, I remember carrier saying that business travel is maybe 80% back in volume terms, but 100% back in revenue terms because prices have increased. So I'm not sure that it's really even that much of a big deal if corporate doesn't fully come back. Now, of course, at the same time, the economy is growing, companies are growing. So, you know, even if a smaller percentage of, employees are traveling, that's still, again, as population, the economy grows, that still may, you know, equal a similar number of people. So I just don't think it's a concern that, you know, that there's, oh, things have, you know, there was this big concern. I remember Bill Gates during the pandemic, he was saying that, oh, you know, travel was going to be like half of what, you know, nobody's going to travel anymore. Everybody will just be on Zoom. And, you know, we should remember that, you know, with every new technology, people always say that people are going to stop traveling for business. You know, oh, the fax machine. Why does anybody need to travel anymore? Email. Nobody needs to travel anymore. They'll just send, you know, electronic messages. And then, same thing with video conferencing. But I think the general rule is, you know, any technology that makes it easier to do business with people in other places will ultimately encourage more travel. So, yeah, if you can, you know, get more sales because it's easier to, you know, Zoom customers and, you know, on the other side of the world, well, chances are you're going to have a bigger business because of it, and you're going to have clients in more places because of it. So, it's a long-winded answer, Gordon. I apologize for that, but my, you know, I think the bottom line is that it's not a concern.
Fears that the conference circuit would completely dry up, and we'd all be shackled to our Zoom calls and our Teams calls was perhaps a little off the mark, to use Ron Swanson from Parks and Recreation. He loves bacon-wrapped shrimp, I think. And the conference circuit, for its many failings, does tend to have quite good food. So maybe the allure of the hors d'oeuvres was too strong. Yeah. Let's take a little look as well.
People go to conferences just for the shrimp cocktail.
Couldn't possibly comment on our global listenership, but I'm certainly partial to a little vol-au-vent or a canapé at the end of a hard day. Let's take a look at the Amex deal, Jay, because for maybe our listeners who aren't quite so familiar with the US credit card scene, this is just a complete other universe. You know, you'd be forgiven for thinking, right, this is an airline that gets people from A to B. What on earth have they got any interest in selling people credit cards, never mind branded credit cards? Can you just unpack it for listeners who are maybe not quite so familiar with the concept? And then we can look at some of the reasons why Delta's partnership with American Express in particular is so lucrative.
Sure, yeah. And this is an entirely a U.S. phenomenon. And it's because of some just very unique laws about, you know, interchange fees that credit card companies can charge and things like that. It's very, very unique to the US. But essentially what happens is a company like American Express or a bank like JP Morgan or Bank of America or Citi, they have these credit card businesses. And what they find is that the best way to get people to use their credit cards is to reward miles. And they're just getting miles is so popular. So if you look at a Citibank card, well, we can use American Express. If you look at American Express, you know, their credit cards, the reason why they're so popular is because people can earn Delta miles. So American Express is willing to pay Delta a fortune for that privilege. And it works for everybody. I mean, American Express loves it because everybody uses their cards. They, you know, make money off of that. And then, of course, Delta loves it because of all the miles that they can sell. It works for, I mean, all the U.S. airlines, pretty much. I mean, all the sizable ones have a major credit card program. Now, for United, Delta, American, and even Southwest, because their networks are so large and the utility of their, you know, where they can get people is just so vast, that's where you start to get just these crazy, you know, these crazy revenue totals, these crazy income totals. So that's a bit of background. I mean, very, very important. And not only, I mean, you can go however deep into this topic as you want, but I mean, even during the COVID crisis, you know, one source of funding for these very distressed airlines was going to the credit card companies, the banks or American Express, and saying, hey, look, can you help us out here? You know, maybe we'll sell you some miles in advance and give us the cash. We need the cash right now. And we saw that repeatedly. We also saw that during the early 2000s when airlines were going through bankruptcies and stuff. So yeah, very important player, financial player in the ecosystem for airlines, certainly true for Delta. And Delta's Amex, you know, if you look at the big four credit card relationships, so Delta Amex is probably the strongest one. Now, United recently renegotiated their deal a couple of years ago, I guess, with JPMorgan Chase. So they have a really good deal. American actually has a strange situation where they have two separate deals, one with Barclays and one with Citi. And that just dates back to when American merged with US Airways, a little history there. But American has actually said repeatedly that one of the reasons why their margins, their profit margins are routinely underperforming Delta is because their credit card deals are not as good. And they kind of hinted that they're, you know, now talking to Citi and Barclays about that. So look for, you know, sometime perhaps in the next year, an announcement, you know, hey, American says, hey, you know, we renegotiate our deals with this bank or that bank. So there's that. And then I mentioned United. The other big one, Southwest, they also have a deal with JPMorgan Chase, and that's extremely lucrative for Southwest as well.
Unreal numbers.
The numbers are strong. And you're talking about, and sorry, I just was going to say, like, the number of just not necessarily the people who hold these credit cards, but if you just look at the people that are members of these programs, I mean, it's just crazy. I mean, they used to be a little more transparent about this. I haven't seen any recent numbers, but I wouldn't be surprised. And if someone from Delta can, you know, correct me on this if I'm way off base, but I wouldn't be surprised if there are something like 200 million SkyMiles members. Remember, there's only 340 million people in the entire United States, and that includes, you know, babies and, you know, that. So it's people don't travel. So
I've got this image of a toddler swiping the credit card to get the bottle.
Yeah. That's probably not too far from the truth, considering you know, the numbers here. But wow, I mean, just these numbers are just crazy, crazy large.
I can help you with a little tidbit in terms of your mission to find out how many people use the card. Some reporting from our colleague Meghna during the week for Skift said that CEO Ed Bastian, that's Delta's CEO, of course, he previously told investors that around 1% of the US economy is spent on Delta's credit card, which is just mind-blowing to an external pair of eyes. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Jason, so much more to discuss. We are going to continue this conversation into part two, look at some regional flying and also some of the broader prospects for Q1 for other airlines across the United States. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after this very short break. Hello and welcome back to the Airline Weekly Lounge podcast. I'm your host, Gordon Smith, and this week I'm joined by co-host Jay Shabbat. We've been discussing all things Delta, and we're going to continue discussing all things Delta because there is so much to discuss, Jay. We were just touching there before the break on the American Express partnership and just how lucrative that can be. One area that historically has been not as lucrative, to put it diplomatically, shall we say, is regional flying. And that's really struggled a bit since the pandemic due to the pilot shortages and some other sort of macroeconomic trends. But Delta mentioned during their earnings call on Wednesday that they want to get back into the regional flying scene and maybe even fully restore the network that they had pre-pandemic.
Yeah, that's right. And that's pretty much the one part of the network where the utilization rates for the fleet are really not back to 2019 levels. And they hope to get it there. They, interestingly enough, I believe they said wide body utilization rates are now ahead of 2019 levels. Now, when you get in between on the narrow bodies, I don't think they're quite there yet, but they're pretty close. Now, Delta does have those, I'm skirting around your question here. I promise I'll get to it, Gordon, but I just wanted to mention that Delta does have the A321s with the Pratt & Whitney geared turbofan engines that are giving everyone headaches. But it doesn't seem to be nearly as much of a problem for them as it is for perhaps, you know, a Spirit or a JetBlue, you know, some of the smaller airlines. And that's in part because Delta has their own, you know, in-house maintenance team, and in part because Delta is just such an important customer for Pratt & Whitney and for, you know, Airbus that, you know, they perhaps get a little bit of preferential treatment when it comes to, you know, maintenance resources and whatnot. So I just wanted to make clear that overall, Delta is not having nearly the kind of supply side problems in terms of like getting fleet in the air and labor shortage as some of these other like low cost carriers, for example. Now, but they are, as you kind of alluded to, Gordon, they are experiencing some of that more on the regional side. And they said that over time, they're going to get that back up and running, and that will help them, you know, do even better. So, you know, there you have it. Now, Delta has, you know, without going into too much of the, you know, details of the Delta network, they do have a lot of shorter stage, kind of smaller. It's just kind of the nature of the southeastern part of the United States. There's a lot of kind of smallish, medium-sized cities. If you picture like surrounding Atlanta, you know, the Birminghams and Jacksonvilles and Jacksons, and you know, there's just Savannahs. There's just like a lot of those kind of cities, Charlestons. And what they've been able to do is they've been able to use these small narrow bodies like the A220. And they, you know, prior to that, I think they even still have 717s. You know, these are very small narrow bodies where you're starting to even overlap with in terms of size with what you might consider a regional jet. So, you know, in that sense, they kind of they're able to cover their bases on some of the smaller routes that way. So I don't think it's, you know, maybe as big of a problem. American has talked a lot about how their regional network is just extremely important to them, but not yet optimized. And it's probably less of a problem for Delta than it is for American. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment, Jay. And the Delta president on the earnings call Wednesday said they had a total of 100 regional jets that are either underutilized or not in service. So they've got a little bit of wiggle room to get those planes in the air once they can get labor and other elements in place. Let's move on, Jay. Let's go south of the border to Aeromexico, because that, you'd think, were sort of fairly natural bedfellows, both in the SkyTeam alliance and complementary networks. But they've run into some issues with regards to how close Delta and Aeromexico could get. A bit of a standoff with the DOT. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, well, not a whole lot, other than as you said, you know, the regulatory the U.S. regulators have kind of looked at that and sort of raised concerns about it being non-competitive. I mean, they haven't issued anything binding yet, and Delta says they're discussing the matter with the relevant regulatory authorities. So we'll see where that all goes. Interestingly enough, like Latin America, the bigger priority for Delta is their joint venture with LATAM. Which they are growing very fast. They, not too long ago, maybe was it 2 years ago, that they received antitrust immunity for that. And they've been adding a lot of new routes between, you know, for example, Brazil to Atlanta, Brazil to Florida, Brazil to New York, things like that. So I would say that's, you know, more of the priority looking down to Latin America. And I guess the only other thing I would say, you know, reverting back to Mexico, is that it is a very interesting market because the Mexican economy is in a quite an advantageous position now with supply chains being rebuilt. Previously, a lot of U.S. companies sourced a lot of their production in Asia, China, for example, China primarily. And a lot of that is moving to Mexico now. So you see this huge boom in places like Monterrey, Mexico, for example, where you know, Tesla wants to build a factory, and even interestingly enough, even the Chinese car manufacturers are now moving into this region. So that's a potential area of growth if the economy, you know, does really fulfill its promise down there. But again, I wouldn't put that very, very high on the list of, you know, things that Delta's looking at.
They do have their finger in many global pies.
For sure.
Even speaking as a European, their investment in Virgin Atlantic, and plenty of others. Let's touch very briefly, Jay, and just give our listeners a little preview, if we can, looking at the other Q1 earnings that we're expecting over the next few weeks. Delta first out the gates, as we've said. but we've got the other US majors following suit in the next fortnight. If you had to get your crystal ball out, what are your predictions?
Right. And it's always, you know, Delta being always the airline that goes first, you always have to ask the question, to what extent are their results representative of what's to follow of everybody else in the U.S.? And the answer is probably, you know, even more so now than in earlier times, probably not very representative. We'll see how United does. Now, United has the closest kind of, let's say, situation to Delta, in the sense that they do have, you know, high exposure to a lot of these booming markets, the premium, the intercontinental, the big loyalty programs. So you would expect them to do somewhat well. Now, keep in mind, the first quarter does tend to be rather rough for United. Their network tends to be very east-west oriented, so they're a little different than Delta in that respect. So I think I wouldn't even be surprised. I'm not sure if they gave, did they give guidance? They may have even said that the first quarter is going to be loss-making. If I'm imagining that, perhaps I am, then let me just say that I wouldn't be surprised if the first quarter is loss-making for them. But I do expect them, you know, if trends continue, to have, you know, perfectly good second or third quarter. Now, then you get into American, you know, what are they going to report? Well, American, you know, they don't have as much exposure to some of this intercontinental, you know, strength that we've talked about. And so they've been kind of lagging Delta and United in recent quarters. And you kind of expect that to, you know, not too much change there. And then another, you know, huge question is how are these low-cost carriers, these struggling low-cost carriers like Southwest and especially Spirit, but also, you know, Frontier. These carriers all had very, very disappointing years in 2023. And is that going to continue into 2024? Hard to say. It's, you know, there's some fundamental realities that are still with us, you know, that are still burdening these guys. I mean, one being that there's this, now remember, more so than a Delta and United, a Southwest or a Spirit or a Frontier, their business models depend very heavily on growing rather rapidly to create the economies of scale, which in turn reduce your unit cost. That's a very essential part of these low-cost carrier business models. But when Boeing is not delivering your planes on time, or when Pratt & Whitney has got your engines in the shop, so you've got, you know, 50 planes on the ground that you can't fly, it becomes much more difficult to grow, much more challenging from a cost perspective. And then, of course, you know, going back on the revenue side, you don't have, you know, flights to Paris in first class that you can monetize right now. So I suspect that the challenges remain for these LCCs, but we shall see. And we don't have very long to wait, do we, Gordon? Only a couple of weeks.
No, we don't. No, just the next few weeks. And we'll, of course, keep you updated both on the Airline Weekly Lounge podcast, but also the Airline Weekly issues. We will keep you abreast of the latest developments there with Jay's frankly unmatchable analysis. And you were absolutely right, Jay. United did forecast a first quarter loss back in January, largely attributable.
I wasn't imagining that.
No. It seems like absolute eons ago. But yeah, that was attributed at the time to the Boeing 737 MAX 9 grounding. Got it. Okay. Yes. We're clean out of time, I'm afraid, Jay. I told you Delta would do as both parts, and it sure did. Don't forget, you can always contact us via email. My address is gs@skiff.com. That's G for Gordon, S for Smith. And Jay can be reached via js@skiff.com. That's J for Jay and S for Shabbat. My thanks to Jay for joining me this week and wherever you are in the world. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time. Bye for now.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you for joining us for this week's episode of the Airline Weekly Lounge podcast. Check out airlineweekly.com for a new issue every Monday and updates on the latest airline news throughout the week.